have quite a bit in common, and I've heard that he also falls out of perfectly good airplanes, or has in the past, and that's kind of strange. It's just a little side thing. At this time, it's my privilege to introduce Don P. from Lakewood, California.
I'm Don, I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here tonight. And like you've seen and heard before me, it's good to be sober. Just to be sober. Because that's what the hell it's all about. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous is Alcoholics Anonymous. Just to be sober. Just to be sitting in a room like this in the shape I am and in the condition I am, I'll settle for that right there. I got a couple of deals to get rid of, then we're gonna get down to business. I got some people here, I think. They're really here to make damn sure I stay honest. I got a gal that's my best friend in the world. She had been my best friend. She is my best friend today. I met her when she was 16 years old at her birthday, and I wasn't even invited. And I was loaded on wine and weed. And I'd like to introduce her. She's the head of the gang. I call her my starry-eyed chick, my wife, Elsie. And I like to introduce an oldest son, the oldest of the son, Don, and his girlfriend, Carol, from Medford, Oregon. And my middle-aged boy, Mario, and his friend, Patty, from Medford, Oregon. And I want to thank the chairman and the committee for the invitation that they had given me to come up and see my friends in Grand Pass, Oregon once again. I love you. But like I said, I'm in a business today, believe it or not. And the business is sobriety. And we got some new ones here. And I don't know who's new or what's what. But for any new ones, newer ones, or anybody having trouble, I can only tell you what these old timers told me when I got here. And God bless these old timers. God bless them. Because one night, sitting on my hands, with my back up against the wall, in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, God bless these old-timers, they shot me down with the most beautiful word in the world. The most beautiful word. And there's a lot of words in this world, a lot of them. And there's a lot of great words in this world. And there's a lot of words in this so-called Webster's Dictionary that I don't know how to read. And I don't know how to read tonight. And one night they shot me down with the most beautiful word in the world. Because at the end of this trip, at the end of this life, at the end of this road with alcohol and narcotics. People out there, and people that were kinda near me, kinda, not too close. They stopped saying it to me completely. Completely. It never entered my mind. And to be honest with you, I hadn't heard of it for quite a few years. And one night I was sitting on my hands with my back up against the wall in an AA meeting. And God bless these old timers. They shot me down. They shot me down right to the ground with the most beautiful word in the world. And for you new ones, newer ones, or anybody having trouble, I hope the hell I shoot you down. I hope I do. Because they told me I was welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me if I was having trouble with booze, that I was in the right spot. And I was home free. Free. Because AA worked and AA worked good. And I love AA and I love to be sober. For you new ones, you hear about God mentioned in AA. And I'll tell you this, don't let it bug you. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religion. There is no way in the world, strictly impossible, for us members of Alcoholics Anonymous to take a rubber stamp and stamp religion on our literature. It's impossible. God won't let us. He won't. I asked him. I did. He said, no way. No way. You hear about a power. You hear about a power greater than yourself. And I'll tell you this, and don't kid your bones about it. In other words, don't try to sidestep it or cut a corner with it. It's very, very, very spiritual. Very spiritual. Because by all living rights of my life, up to this very night, I'm supposed to be drunk. I'm supposed to be. This big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that you heard the fifth chapter read out of, which is the heartbeat and the foundation of an AA way of life, and that's what AA is. It's a way of life. It's a way of life for an alcoholic to live very good, for an alcoholic to live very comfortable, and for an alcoholic to live very, very sober. And this big book, which I call my Bible today, gives me Don every right in the world to tell anybody I want about Don and Don only. And I'll tell you this, I was born an alcoholic. Now some people might argue this fact and beef about it and say during the years in the course of their drinking, somewhere along the line they drank over an invisible line into alcoholism. And I'll also tell you this, I ain't got no quarrel and I ain't got no beef. Because if you're an alcoholic, and I'm talking about alcoholic, if you're an alcoholic, your drinking will never get better, it'll get worse. And after it gets worse, it'll get worser. And that's just what the hell it did. That's exactly what it did. I can only share with you what these old timers shared with me when I got here. I share you a drunken life, and I also share you an AA way of life. And I tell you this about my drunken life. There is nothing pretty or cute about my life before I reached the doors of AA. I'm not proud of it. Not one second am I proud of it. But I'll also tell you this. I ain't a damn bit ashamed of it either. Not one bit. Because of what I found in AA. Because of what I found. I know people on this program that come out of $400,000 homes with carpets that thick on it, that can buy and sell this part of town. Buy and sell it. Financially wise and educational wise, they can take this part of the country, stick it in their back pocket and walk away with it. And they had the same damn trouble I had. Same damn trouble. Booze. Booze. And I share with you many years ago, a 15-year-old kid standing in the alleys of East L.A. And East L.A., to give you an idea what it was like, if you lived in a big city like New York City, they'd probably call it Lower East Side Hell's Kitchen. Or if you lived in Arkansas, Texas, or Oklahoma, it was commonly known as Shantytown on the other side of the track. And I share with you a 15-year-old kid standing in the alleys of East L.A., and I got my first jolt of that wonderful stuff called alcohol, and I was hooked from my very first drink. Alcohol never left my life again. Never, until I walked through the doors of AA. I was a teenage drunk, and I didn't get loaded in no teenage high school party either. I got loaded in an alley behind a city playground with six friends of mine, the neighborhood wino. And this is the avenues alcohol taken me on. I know the alleys, I know the streets, I know the jails, and I know the institutions. And my first drink in my days and my time was commonly known as Mexican champagne, Muscatel wine. And I was a guzzler from the start go, because I guzzled for the bottom of the bottle. And it did for me then what it did for me for 17 years. 17 years of living screaming hell. Because I got loaded, I got smashed, I got drunker than hell, and I landed in jail. The next morning I woke up at the Pico Georgia Street Police Station, downtown Los Angeles, juvenile tank, booked on a common drunk charge. And the next morning I woke up sick. Sick. And every damn time I went out and got loaded, the next morning I woke up sick. Thank God there was a water fountain in the joint. But I was the only sick teenager in the joint. And being a teenager that I was and the common drunk charge that I had, authorities notified a father up in Frisco to come down and get me out. A divorced father, but a good father. And a good father that he was, he came down, got me out. And we got on the streetcar. And we started back for this barrio, this neighborhood. And this father chewed me up and he chewed me down. and he told me to stay the hell out of jails. And the good son that I was, I told him I would. And that night he got on a Greyhound and went back to Frisco. And the next day, automatically, I went back to my six buddies at the end of that alley, automatically, because I had found magic in a bottle, living instant pure magic. I loved what alcohol did for me. I loved everything about it. I had no quarrel with it. I loved the feeling it gave me. It lit me up like a Christmas tree automatically, and it automatically lit the world around me, automatically. The playground lights automatically got brighter. The kids that were doing the right thing, playing football and baseball, automatically made more noise. It let me walk down that neighborhood street, tough, street gang related, street gang. In my time, in my place, we were commonly known as zoot suiters. Let me stand on my corner, protect my territory. In East LA, we protect territories. We don't know why. We don't, but we do. And they do today. It's just there. But we'd get on this corner and protect our territory and get that wine in us and that weed in us. And I knew something right then and there. I knew this, without a doubt inside of me. I had no idea where alcohol was going to take me. No idea whatsoever. I had no idea what it was going to do to me. No idea whatsoever. But I knew this right then and there, with no doubt inside of me, that the magic I had found, I wasn't going to let anything or anybody get in front of it. No father, no mother. And if there was a wife or family later, not even them. I knew that right then and there. I share with you an 18-year-old kid, 18 years old. And there's no age that runs in this book, no age whatsoever. And at 18 years old, I could have used every bit and every ounce of what this very program has to offer right then and there. But I couldn't have got here no sooner than I did. And I thank my God today. I thank my God today that I reached you people and the doors of AA for one very, very simple reason. And the book talks about simplicity. It saved my life. Saved my life. And that's what the hell it's all about. Saving lives. 18 years old, laying in the old Los Angeles City Jail. Worldwide famous Lincoln Heights Great Bar Hotel. Drunk tank. You think an experience of one night in a drunk tank would be a cure for an alcoholic, but it ain't. L.A. City Jail, where the traffic's heavy, drunk tank. Not one of these suburb tanks you see today with all those fine painted bars and no dust on them. They even tell me they're painted two-tone today. I don't know. I'm talking about a drunk tank. I'm talking about the Black Mariah running up Fifth Street Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles, the street of lost souls. I'm talking about stacking these, picking up every sick looking, feeling alcoholic they can find. And they stack you in this tank. They stack you. There's no bunks in this tank. There's floor racks and a drain in the center. And they stack you 40 wide and 60 high. And you're sick and you need a drink and you want a drink and you can't go get a drink. You need a drink, you want a drink, and you can't go get a drink. And in an alcoholic's life, that's like living between heaven and hell. And you're crawling over each other. And you go in with no lights on you, and you come out with lights on you. And you walk over the top. And we had a very simple but very serious conversation in that tank. Very simple but yet very serious. Because we got a very serious disease. The very nature of our disease, the bottom line in Alcoholics Anonymous of our disease, very serious. There's nothing funny, there's nothing cute, and there's nothing pretty about an alcoholic. And I'm talking about alcoholic. About an alcoholic going out and taking one drink. The very nature of our disease. The very nature of our disease, sure disaster. Sure disaster. Down the tube. My life showed this to me before I got here. Showed it to me. Made a believer out of me. And you people in this beautiful book, you tell me this while I'm here. You keep it right up front for me. Right up front. In front of everything in my life. And I love you for it. I love you for it. This next conversation I share with you the next couple of minutes, it don't mean a damn thing to my wife. It never meant nothing to my mother. And it never meant nothing to my dad, God rest his soul. Because they're not alcoholics. My wife couldn't be an alcoholic if she wanted to be. Yeah. Because they don't know what the hell it is in the world to crave a drink. To crave it. They don't know what the hell it is in the world for he or she being alcoholic to take everything dear and near in their lives that actually inside oneself you actually love and stomp it to death because you need a drink. They just don't know and they'll never know. Because they're not alcoholics. But in those old days, they used to look up on our scratch sheet, our jacket. I heard a gal say one time in an AA meeting, God bless her, she said, your track record. Track record. We all got track records. And in those old days, if you didn't have too many common drunk priors on you, you know common drunk? Like slipping off the curb, common drunk. Walking into a telephone post, common drunk. Coming out of a joint or an alley, or whatever you called home, was 6 or 7 blocks away from a penthouse to a cardboard box, it didn't really matter. And by the time you got there, you damn near killed yourself doing it. Common drunk. If it looked kind of clean, they used to kick us out 40 or 50 at a time, 5 o'clock in the morning. And if you missed that 5 o'clock call, you knew you had another chance at 8:30. But when you missed that 8:30 call, you knew you was had. You knew you had to go see the man. And after that first line of court were let out, and these guys piled down the cement hallway with their time and their life in their hands, and many of them were doing a life sentence at 30 days at a time. The rest of us waiting for 10 o'clock court would smash up to that gate as tight as we can get. And very simple, but yet very serious, the conversation ran like this. What's the man handing out? Is he giving out 30, 60, 90, 180 days on a common drunk charge. 180 days. And you hope to Christ whoever was on a bench that morning had the privilege to kiss his old lady goodbye, or something good and very special would happen in his life between his house and that bench. You'd actually pray for it. But many, many, many times in my life, when I got that 30, 60, 90, or whatever the hell they gave me, and I got physical healthy, I fattened up on that yellow mush and beans. I was young enough. I'd shake that alcohol pretty good. I was young, fast, and smart. And I'd get physical healthy. And my roll-up day was getting close, and I knew I was gonna hit the streets again. I had a sincerity inside of Don that all us alcoholics have. We all have it. Somewhere along of our lives, we carry it inside of us. And when my roll-up day was getting close and I knew I was gonna hit the streets again, that little voice inside of Don would jump up loud and clear, and loud and clear with all honesty within, it would say this: next time it's gonna be different. I'm gonna straighten up and fly right, or whatever the hell it took. And it'd take me about 25 minutes to cross those railroad tracks and get back in that neighborhood and slip into my zoot suit and get on my corner and get that tokay in my belly. And then those cops from that Hollenbeck station could have came down the hill and made the big capture anytime they wanted. I share with you, a 21-year-old man grabbed some of that sincerity I had on that second floor tank. Straighten up, fly right, stay out of the street, stay out of jail. That ain't no life. And I met a young square chick. Young. Square. Square. Square, square. She didn't cuss, she didn't smoke. She went to church and I didn't. She smokes these Viceroys tonight like a locomotive. And to this very night claims I'm the one that got her hooked on them. But I jibed and connived and sweet-talked her and love-talked her and talked her into marrying me. And with all her young heart and soul, she fell hook, line, and sinker. I told her I'd work hard for her and protect her, and she wouldn't have a damn thing to worry about the rest of her life. And with her young heart and soul, she fell hook, line, and sinker, and we got married. And then I took her on a rip-roaring life of an alcoholic, a living, screaming nightmare. Because the jails didn't stop. The jiving, the conniving, the lying didn't stop. The common drunk charges stopped because somebody out there educated me a little and taught me how to drive an automobile. You got it. Then came the 502s. I share with you, a young husband, a young father, with a young baby daughter, and I'm standing in an old wooden house in East LA, and I'm in a living room and I'm sick, and I need a drink and I want a drink, but I don't go get a drink. And I'm the only one doing the talking. I just bailed myself out of the OLA County Jail with the rent money on my first 502. And when you do something like that, you're usually gonna be the only one doing the talking. And I'm telling this gal for the thousandth and one time in her life, no more, I've had it, I'm finished. I quit for the rest of my life. And I meant every living breath of it. Every living breath of it. Then came another 502, then came another 502, then came another 502, then came another 502, then came two more. And then it got worse. I worked hard for a drink. I worked hard for a drink and I stole hard for a drink. I'm a thief. Because when I needed a drink, I needed a drink. My wife knows I'm a thief. I know I'm a thief. God knows I'm a thief. Now you know I'm a thief. But when I needed a drink, I needed a drink. I had a craving and a thirst in this body that wouldn't quit. That wouldn't quit. I never once in my life, not once, sat there and said, shall I take a drink or shall I not take a drink? Not once. I never once in my life sat there and said, shall I not drink because the old lady's mad? Hell, she was mad all the time. It was a hell of a life. I didn't want no part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not want to come to AA. I had it mentioned in my life twice before I got here. Mentioned. Not taken, mentioned. Once when I was doing some time in this famous Lincoln Heights Grey Bar Hotel, an old wino from the San Fernando Valley area, one of the unfortunates that our book talks about, the unfortunate, and they are not at fault, that failed to grasp some manner of living in physical sobriety, dryness, or whatever the hell you want to call it, could only stay physically sober 9, 10 months, whatever, and fall time and time again. This man seen me flopping out of drunk tanks in courtrooms for 2 years straight, mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous to me, had everything good to say about it, but I was young, fast, and smart, and I turned my back on it and walked away from it. And 3 years before I got here, this starry-eyed chick that wasn't starry-eyed no more, that was a full-fledged veteran and cussed like a trooper, mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous to me one night, and I damn near killed her that night. Because I didn't want no part of people, I didn't want no part of nothing. I did not know about the hopeless and the helpless till I got to you beautiful people and this beautiful book. But I figured I was gonna die drunk, so what, it's my life. And what the hell's everybody worried about? That's what was buried inside of Don. That's what was buried inside of Don when I reached the doors of AA. And at the end of this trip, I was hooked on vodka and narcotics, and the son of a bitch turned me every way but loose, and I couldn't afford it. The narcotic part, I don't know what the doctors call them. I know them as Bennies, Dexies, Yellows, and Reds. And a hell of a lot of weed, and a hell of a lot of alcohol. And I worked sick, and I worked drunk until I couldn't work no more. And then I stole because I needed a drink. And at the end of this trip, I had three important people in my life that were important to me. But I would never tell nobody this. I wouldn't even tell them that. Because us alcoholics, we're a strange breed of cats. Strange breed. It's against the grain of the wood. It's against our very nature to cop out. We don't like to cop out. That's like swimming upriver backwards. It's against our nature. And one night, this starry-eyed chick that wasn't starry-eyed no more, that had three other boys added to this family, moved me out of East LA one night for the first time in my life. I guess trying to hold this marriage together. And we went 30 miles south to a little town called Compton. And then I had two places to operate in. It didn't take me long to start operating around Compton. But one night this gal told me this. She said, I ain't gonna get a divorce. Don't ask me why. I love to believe today, tonight, for my own personal reason, I love to carry this in my heart and in my soul, that when this gal said I ain't gonna get a divorce, I love to believe because of one or two reasons. One, because of her old-fashioned way and her old-fashioned soul, or two, because of her Catholic faith and her Catholic God, for better or worse or whatever the hell you have, till death do us apart. I love to carry that with me today. But one night this gal told me this, I ain't gonna get a divorce. You can come in and out of this house as you please, because I don't care no more. But I wanna tell you this, you son of a bitch. The longer you stay away from me and the children, the better off we all are. And I figured you too, huh, lady? After I worked hard for you all my life, and I slapped her on a shelf of hate, my shelf, my hate, that ran with this alcohol beef. Every ounce of that hate was mine. The only thing was, I didn't find out it was all mine until after I sobered up in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I walked out and I went over to see a mother-in-law, the greatest mother-in-law a man can have, God rest her soul. Kind-hearted woman that in the earlier days, sometimes when I was sick and then I was in her neighborhood, I'd go in and jive and connive her out of 75 cents, half a buck, try to get a short dog, try to get a Mickey, try to get well. Try to get well. That morning drink was nothing new to me. Nothing new. I learned that at 15 years old with my six friends in that alley. They told me to get some of the hair of the dog that bit you and it'd take care of the deal. And it did in the beginning. And this mother-in-law in the earlier days had cussed me out politely, but hand me the money and I'd go on my way. And that night she stepped over the line. And she told me this. Ya no, cabrón, no more. I don't think I gotta translate that. That runs heavy in any man's language. But she said, I'm not on your side no more. I'm on my daughter's side. Because you're not taking care of her and you're not taking care of my grandkids. And I figured you too, huh, lady? You're as bad as your daughter. And I slapped her on a shelf beside her daughter and I walked out. And one day, staggering around a construction yard, an Okie superintendent called me in for a deep, serious conversation. And he fired me for the third and last time as a bitch and old drunk. And he told me to get the hell out of his life and stay out of his life. And I figured you too, huh, Buster? After I worked hard for you all my life, and I threw him on a shelf and I walked out. And I hated Okies and Arkies and Texans, Oreganians, or anybody from the farm country. For no big deal, no big deal, no big deal. I drank with you, I fought with you. I lost a hell of a lot of them, I might have won a couple. Redneck, tough, skinny, wiry, but tough, don't think not. But no big deal, because you was a bunch of squares from the farm country, and I was a big time swinger from East LA, big time operator. I swang out of a pool hall to the institutions and back again, big time operator. Yeah, pool hall. Not one of these billiard halls you see down there, lit up like the May Company. Pool hall. They got them in Oklahoma, Texas, and Arkansas. Look like an old garage. Some of my buddies shoved some pool tables in. When you went around front, you seen a hand-painted sign said pool. And when you walked through the front door, you seen their mellow wines, draft beer bar, and their mellow wines on a shelf. And you went back where the tables was, it was dark and dingy, and you could smell the weed rolling right around the wall. and I swing from there to the jails and back again. And along with my plowboy friends, I also hated the Salvation Army too. Because in my time, in my way, if you happen to stagger down Main Street in Los Angeles, 99 times out of 100, either on 2nd, 3rd, 4th, or 5th, you'd find the Salvation Army there. And they'd be beating their drums and tooting their horn and doing their thing. And they preach the Word of God. The Word of God, which I had a deadly fear of. Deadly fear. And I'd cross the street and I'd go down the other side. And they preached the word love, which many, many, many times in my life, I had many opportunities with this word before I reached the doors of AA. Through relatives and through people and institutions. But I turned my back on it and walked away from it because I figured it was for sissies. But I'll tell you this tonight, with no doubt inside of Don one second, no doubt whatsoever, I know what love is today. I know what love is today. I love AA and I love to be sober. At the end of this trip, trying to shake this thing by myself, promising no other human being on earth, no father, no mother, no wife, no kids, promising no God whatsoever, promising myself inside. You know, that little silent inside promise? Promising myself inside. I went 2 days without no kind of alcohol and 2 days without no kind of narcotics. And on the third morning of the third day, I walked in a liquor store in the town of Compton, California, and I bought me a half a pint of vodka, and for the next 5 years of my life, I went on a 5-year living screaming drunk. I never came down. I was sick in the morning, drinking to get well, and by that night, I was just as drunk as I was the night before. 365 days a year, and if it was leap year, it was 366. And there was no time out for Saturdays and Sundays. And I worked sick and I worked drunk until I couldn't work no more. And then I stole because I needed a drink. And then one night, something happened to Don. Something strange happened to Don. I was on a vacant lot. I was a couple of miles from this house. This house that I've been in and out, but more out than in, because alcohol had taken its toll. Like this very book said it will, your drinking will never get better, it'll get worse. And after it gets worse, it'll get worser. And that night on a vacant lot, I didn't have a damn thing, nothing. I had a pair of Levi's and a t-shirt, and the Levi's wasn't dark blue. And I had a full half pint of vodka. Full, and I drank half of it. And I never drank half of nothing in my entire life, not once. And a strange thing happened. The thought of Alcoholics Anonymous had seeped in my head. And it said, go see. Just go take a look. And I counted 3 telephone posts to the left and 4 to the right. And I snatched the other half. And I figured if I didn't find what I was looking for, I'm coming back for you. And I wiggled myself around this town and found myself in front of this house. This house where this starry-eyed chick that wasn't starry-eyed and 4 kids was. And that night
the message, thank you. Please stop your machine at this point and turn your cassette over for the balance of the message. Thank you. Please stop your machine at this point and turn your cassette over for the balance of the message. Thank you. Please stop your machine at this point and turn your cassette over for the balance of the message. Thank you. Please stop your machine at this point and turn your cassette over for the balance of the message. Thank you. Please stop your machine at this point and turn your cassette over for the balance of the message. Thank you. Please stop your machine at this point and turn your cassette over for the balance of the message. Thank you. Please stop your machine at this point and turn your cassette over for the balance.